Hello and welcome to episode 172 of the Saints Score podcast, where we analyse everything going on at Southampton Football Club. After losing to Leeds United last week, we thought our lowest loss of the campaign was behind us, but we were proven wrong. Around 4,500 Grimsby fans travelled up to watch their side knock Saints out of the cup without really having to do much whatsoever. Then, well, we bounced back with a narrow victory over Leicester City in the Premier League and put safety, for now, within touching distance. I'm Harry Tizard and I'm joined by Jamie Allen and Mikey Maidment this week. Jamie, how are you doing?
Wonderful, actually. I was saying to Harry during the week that I was just so emotionally unavailable when it came to Southampton. I wasn't going to go to the Leicester game. But the day before, I bucked up my card and thought, you know what, I'm not going to be a fake fan. Even though I know we're going to lose, I'm going to go. But thank you. Thankfully, to my surprise, we didn't lose. And I was happy to see our first win since August at home, league game.
Marky, you're back on the pod. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Had a week off, I think it was, but no, I was working, unfortunately, so couldn't be on it. But yeah, no, doing well. Of course, gutted about the FA Cup midweek because I was there, and then the Leicester game. Unfortunately, I wasn't. But yeah, it's a fantastic win. I mean, we just need to get wins. It doesn't matter where or when or how they come. We just need wins on the board. So. To get 3 points to push us slightly closer to an incredibly, incredibly tight bottom eight, like it's fantastic. So yeah, hopefully we just keep more convincing. Fingers crossed, but we just keep getting these wins and picking up these 3 points.
Well, I wanted to just skip over Grimsby because I thought, you know what, simple win. Talk about the plus points, all of that nice stuff, and then we'll get on to the Premier League game. But. Well, we got knocked out by League Two Grimsby. A massive chance to get into the quarterfinal against, you know, the lowest ranked team in the competition remaining, but we didn't. We got knocked out. Two penalties, two ridiculous ones of that as well. Jamie, what's your opinion on the game overall?
Wow. How can words sum up this? Thankfully, I missed this first half because I was working. But I unfortunately watched the second half in a taxi ride on the way home. And it's just so lackluster. And it's just like the silly decisions for the penalties. Obviously, I'm not saying the decisions that were awarding penalties were silly, because obviously they're justified. It's just more the players' reactions, like, Cletus, I have no idea what went through his mind. Because like that happens like 10 times in a game, a player kind of pushes you in the back, just put you off, it's getting your head. But it's like no need to hit back at him, absolutely not. And it just shows why he's been out of the team a lot, to be honest. I think no one really saw what Sellers and Jones were on about when it's talking about his attitude problems, but I think it's kind of shown then.
Mikey, did it sort of feel that we shot ourselves in the foot twice? I may be disrespecting Grimsby here, but apart from the penalties, they created an XG of 0.04, so they didn't really do anything, yet they scored two goals.
Yeah, no, and that's the frustrating thing, is that we controlled the entire 90 minutes and they probably attacked our box three times at a maximum. And they managed to score two goals through two ridiculous decisions that our centre-halves decided to make. And it's a story of the season, really, just shooting ourselves in the foot with silly decision-making and panicky, just panicky defenders. And yeah, it's just frustrating to not only have the loss, but the way that it came about. Because arguably, I wouldn't say we played well, but we did what we needed to do throughout the game. And we were dominating the ball, and we were patient in our play, and we were building up chances, and we were actually doing quite well in the first half. And then just a silly decision from Lianco was giving away a penalty. And then in the second half, we came out and we started attacking, and we looked good, and we looked like we were going to get chances to score goals. And then 5 minutes into the half, another silly decision from Kaleta Carr just changes the game completely again. And then we're really chasing. And it's disappointing that it got to the point where Ward-Prowse had to put his boots on and get out there. Like, that's, we could have done resting him, and we could have done not giving him any minutes. And yeah, the starting 11 that played that first half really let himself down, and it'd be interesting to see how many of them stay in, and interesting to see if Lianco or Kaleta Carr get a chance back in. I mean, of course, Salisu's coming back from fitness, and Ben Reck and Belakotchap has been Selez's two main centre halves, and Benderek retained his place even with the minor mistake that you could say for the Leeds goal, or like the miscommunication decision making that was for the Leeds goal. So they seem to be the ones that are going to be used, but you do have a selection of players that you do think, are they actually going to get themselves into the first team squad or not? And I can't see many of them being able to break through.
Once again, fair play to Grimsby. They won five games above teams, teams above them in the FA Cup, league standing wise. But I still feel like with the nine changes that we made, we should be getting past them. Jamie, what was your thoughts on the team selection? You know, Orsic came in, Chaletasar came in, McCarthy came in, Mara and Armstrong as a partnership up too. For me, it's still by far and away a team that should be crashing through that game 3-4-0.
And you could argue that team could do well in the Championship and fight for promotion. It's just like I said, I was kind of happy to see McCarthy back as well from injury. People have their opinions on him, but I still think he's a good goalkeeper. And it's nice to see him actually get a chance. And there's not really too much he could have done with the penalties. But I do like the squad rotation, because Selez said in the week that he's got a massive squad. It's probably the biggest we've ever had in recent Premier League years. And it's you have to rotate them. Unfortunately, the rotations didn't work because they were all fairly useless, really. But I don't know, so you need to give players a chance, but I don't, like Mike said a minute ago, I can't see any of them now getting their way into the squad, because that was their chance to really prove themselves. I know it was against League 2 Grimsby, so they can't really, not really meant to prove much, but we still lost to them, and they kind of had a chance to say why they deserved to be in the first team, but they didn't.
I mean, we've been behind quite a lot this season in different cup competitions, especially against teams below us. You know, talk about the Lincolns, talk about the Sheffield Wednesday. So I wasn't too worried when we went 1-0 down. I was a bit more concerned when we went 2-0 down, because then you have to really fight back into it. James Ward-Prowse comes on. Chaletasar sort of makes up from his mistake for scoring. Then we think we got an equaliser through Walcott, but sadly it wasn't to be. We couldn't break down Grimsby. Mikey, were we as bad as people really, you know, suggested that we were? Because I still think that we created enough chances to win that game.
We created enough, but it's again just giving away two silly opportunities for Grimsby to score. It's not even the if Lianco leaves that cross, like it's a, like the first penalty incident. It's quite an easy cross to deal with. He's missed the header, and if he just lets it go, yeah, it's going to someone at the back post, but you're not giving them an opportunity. How many times have you seen a player at the back post on his, I think, weaker foot lifting the ball over the crossbar as it bounces in front of him? You see it on many occasions. So I think you just let the ball go in that situation. You don't panic and stick your arm out and give away a penalty when VAR's involved. Coletta Cars is just, yeah, the strikers bought it, but there's no reason to turn around and hit someone on the back. Like, there is no reason to do that. But yeah, we definitely created enough throughout the game. It felt like we did create enough, and yeah, we struggled to break Grimsby down, but I thought when we counter-pressed, won the ball back high and they were exposed, we had really good opportunities to open them up. And of course, we scored an offside goal in the first half with Gineppo being offside as Mara tucked one away. And the second half, it's fantastic thinking from Ward-Prowse, Walcott with a really good run from a free kick and getting us in behind. And it was really tight with the offside as well. So, but no, we dominated the game. We did exactly what we needed to do, and we ended up losing, and that's just the way it goes sometimes. But yeah, it's just the silly decision making has let us down, really.
Yeah, sadly the FA Cup magic did go against us penultimately on this game. Before we just forget about it, what's your emotional standpoint after this game, Jamie? Because was it the lowest that you felt this season? Because for me, even though it wasn't a Premier League game, it sort of felt like the mental attitude of that game. It made me feel that we didn't have a chance to stay up.
It's definitely the flattest I've ever been after a game, because I genuinely thought that we will be in the Championship next season, like without a doubt in my mind. Obviously, it's before the win against Leicester, but it's just, I was convinced, because if that team, who should easily be, it could probably compete lower in the Premier League and definitely in the Championship, should smash Grimsby. Like, I remember a prediction I said, so I don't know what I'm going to guess, but I just chuck a 3-0 out of the way because we're going to beat him. I don't really care too much about it because it's Grimsby. But it's just the fact that we lost to them, we didn't really show any fight at all, apart from maybe like when Ballard came on with his little cameo, you could tell he really cared and was pushing, pushing. Like, there was nothing there. And it was just so lackluster. And it just made, I think, us, every fan was thinking it, that relegation is going to happen. But hopefully not anymore for this little win against Leicester. But it was definitely was the worst feeling after a game I've ever felt.
I think I will just argue that point with, like, I don't think it was lackluster. I don't think there was nothing happening. I think in the last half an hour when you had subs coming on and we went 2-0 down, it felt like the side were like, no, we really have to start kicking on here. And we dominated the game. We didn't give away too many chances. The only chance I remember us giving away is Parad having a odd touch on the halfway line, and they broke away and had a one-on-one, and McCarthy did really well. It was good recovery from the lads. But it felt like we really did get them forward, and we deserved to equalise with the Walcott goal that was offside. It felt like we were really trying to get back into it and trying to show that the lads are putting in a performance and they are working hard and they are trying hard. And it just didn't come off. What this side isn't good at is breaking down low blocks. We know this. We've had this for years, where we are a transition team, and if we're playing against a side that are going to block low, then we don't really have a shot of breaking them down. And I think that's why we created our chances when Grimsby won the ball back and we then transitioned and got the ball back and there were gaps to exploit. That's when we're best. And unfortunately, in the last sort of 20 minutes or so, Grimsby just stuck 7, 8, 9 men behind the ball and just went, go on then, do it. And even with the quality that we do have on that field, we've got some international players, we've got players at really high quality playing in the Premier League, we couldn't do it because that's just not the team that we are. It's the team that we always struggle to be. And that's something that we do have to work on, and something that in Hasenhüttl's system, it wasn't something we were good at. Under Jones, we never really got the opportunity to break down a low box because we'd given the ball away before we'd even had that chance. And then we got to see under Sells what he can do. Like, if we would have employed Marsh, it would have been the exact same thing, where no low blocks are broken down. It's just constant transition and mad ball. So we'll see what Sells can do. But yeah, I think the lads really did try. It felt like that they were there, and they were absolutely gutted by the end of it that they had lost the game. They were like, Sells was out on the pitch and ready to sort of, and they did go round the fans that were there. It was a very empty St. Mary's apart from the Grimsby away end. And they did go around and they did clap the fans, and it showed that they did care, that they did lose the game and they wanted to put performance out against Leicester, which thankfully they did.
Well, a few of the players that Sales picks, Orsic, Aribo, Chaletasar, and one that he didn't in James Bree, once again, just that they weren't able to prove themselves, Mikey. Do you think that's going to be it for them for the rest of the season? Because I looked at Orsic, and I think a lot of people outside the club as well looked at him and thought, that is an absolute steal for a relegation team, or a team battling against relegation. But sadly, he's not been able to cut it so far.
Yeah, he's not been able to adapt to the conditions in England, unfortunately. You would have thought with like a bit of Croatian cohort with Kaleta Carr there, but maybe if Kaletakar's not settled in the team at the moment, it's harder to bring another like Croatian in who's like, you want them to gel, and they may have not gelled fantastically well with the situations Kaletakar's in at the club. Yeah, you thought you were getting quite a dynamic winger who could create chances himself and take shots, but that's what we thought Adam Armstrong was going to be. But you've got to remember, Orsic came from a Champions League team in a league where there's only one real team that dominates, which is Dynamo. Like, there's not really another team like Zagreb in Croatia. So Orsic is going from a team where he's going to have multiple chances a game to then only having limited chances a game, moving from a top league to a top team in a league and to a bottom team in a league. And unfortunately, the chances he had, he's not really had a chance to have a shot. I can't remember a game where he's really had a chance to run with the ball and drive with it and have a shot. So yeah, and yeah, he's just not dynamic enough for us. He's very one-footed. He doesn't go on his left foot often. He always wants to cut in on his right, which is something that I think Grimsby picked up on and really started exploiting him, just basically compacting the right-hand side of their defence and stopping any chance of him coming inside and having a shot. And yeah, like, he's probably low on confidence. He's not playing in the side, and that's probably why he's not shooting from 25, 30 yards out. He doesn't want to lose the ball. I think it's the same story with Adam Armstrong, really. We've seen Adam Armstrong come in, struggle to really step up into the league, and he's lost his confidence as well. And I think that's happening to Orsic at the moment, which is a shame, because I think everyone was quite excited as a fan base of Orsic's coming in. We've seen him play at World Cups and play in the Champions League, and he looks like a quality player, which he still is, but just not really had the run of the green, really, at the club at the moment.
Well, just like my notes, it was important that we drew a line under that game and put all of our focus into Leicester in the Premier League. Jamie, at the end of the day, did we win the most important game?
So that line there is brilliant. Oh, the line there. yeah, we really did step up a notch. I think, although, like Mike said, all the players knew that Grimsby game was not good enough. However, I'd also say, like, we were very lucky to win that game against Leicester, because we gave them so many chances to score. It was, like, unbelievable. Because, like, I know they had zero shots on target the whole game, but they should have been at least 3-0 up at half-time, if not 5-0 or 5-1 at the end of the game. But it doesn't matter at the end of the game, because full-time, it's 1-0 to us, and we got 3 points. But we definitely did not make it easy for ourselves. But as I said, we're off the bottom of the table, and that's all that matters.
I mean, we pinpointed Maddison before the game and said, please don't be fit, because he could be the difference. And really, he should have been. He put two brilliant crosses in for Iheanacho, who just headed wide. Soutar hit the bar right at the last minute as well. Mikey, do you agree with the fact that we were a bit lucky to keep a clean sheet, and your overall thoughts on the game as well?
Yeah, only a little bit. I mean, we gave him a couple of chances, didn't we, throughout the game? I was quite nervous. I was in the car driving up to my grand's house, and yeah, we're just sort of very quiet at that point, hoping that Adam Blackmore wouldn't be screaming the balls in the back of the net for Leicester. Yeah, we were lucky. It's similar to the Chelsea game. We were lucky to win that game. We were lucky to win this game. But that's what you got to do. You got to ride your luck. You got to ride your chances. There's always a chance in the 97th minute when I saw Harry Soutar up against, I think it was Sulemana at that point, I'm thinking, oh, that's not a good matchup, is it? And then you see Bazunu flying out of his goal, trying to get it, and yeah. But no, overall in the game, I felt like, to be fair, first half an hour, 35 minutes, we really did quite well. Of course, Leicester started creating a lot of chances around 20, 25 minutes, and we started growing into the game, got the penalty maybe slightly against the run of play, and then after Ward-Prowse missed the resultant penalty, we sort of really stepped up and galvanised as a side, managed to get the goal through Charlie Alcaraz. And then it felt like Leicester really just started coming at us. I think Charlie was quite important for the pressing element of the game. That's what Ruben Sells was talking about after the game. He's very important on the trigger of the press, because he sort of sat as a front two alongside Adams when we were defending in a 4-4-2. And so he was quite key to that trigger. And unfortunately, him in his celebration may have slightly done his ligaments in his knee. And then he's had to come off. And Elianuzzi, who's just not quite the same player. He's not quite as quick. He's not quite as dynamic in that pressing instance. So we sort of lost that ability to do that sort of press. But no, Leicester were a good side who just couldn't finish, and that seems to be the story of their season. They're creating chances. They're just, Jamie Vardy's got too old and you can't play every 90 minutes anymore, and Kelechi Iheanacho's just one of the most like hot and cold strikers in like football. He can sometimes go and score 10-15 goals like he did a couple of years ago when Leicester knocked us out of the cup, or he can just be on this form at the moment, which is just not really scoring. He had 5 shots throughout the game and didn't get one on target. And I mean, Bazunu gave him a gift for one of them getting that shot on target. So yeah, it was a lucky win, but a win nonetheless.
I mean, Iheanacho goes hot and cold. So does Che Adams. Jamie, straight back from injury, was it the right thing to put him into the team?
He's certainly proved himself, Harry, that's for sure, with a gorgeous assist with Charlie Alcaraz. But I saw something that Sellers was saying, like, Paul's not very good on the press just yet, so starting Che is probably the best idea because he has more of the experience in it. And I think it showed because, like I said, he was really good. Even though he came up from injury, playing against his hometown side, he always has a point to prove. Like I said, he scored two in the reverse fixture. Sorry, guys, I'm still not used to having these stats in my brain. It's hard. But I said, I was really impressed with him today, and he got a big applause when he came off in the 63rd minute.
Do you also think, Mikey, part of that decision-making was that Tallpool's, you know, best traits were due to the fact that, you know, he's really tall. And against Soutar, who's 6'7", he can't really have such an advantage, whereas Che Adams is a bit quicker on the ground. A lot of the time he stuck with Wout Faes, which allowed Alcaraz to get in behind.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's an element of, like, I love Che Adams. I think he's such a wonderful player to watch. It's a shame that he doesn't have a good finishing touch in the box, but that's probably why he still plays for us instead of somewhere higher up. But his ability to bring players into the game and his ability to hold the ball up and find a pass is something that we've known about for years. And his partnership with Danny Ings flourished because he had that ability to just play the ball into him. And we saw it now, and as long as you're getting runners beyond him and as long as you're getting runners with him, he's so effective on the ball. And we saw that with the fantastic run from midfield from Charlie to get him behind and be a threat. I think that does make sense. If you talk about, like, Onuachu's effect as a player against Harry Soutar is lesser, and you got Adams who can drop off play, and that's probably why Mara came off the bench as well, because he's someone who can drop off play, a little bit more mobile. He does lack a little bit of pace, though, Mara. I think that's something he's got to add during the summer, is get into the gym, do some power work, do some stuff that will help him just speed up a little bit more. Because I think that's something he does lack in his game. And if he does get that element of pace, he probably has the ability to step up in the Premier League. I personally would have bought Onuachu on instead of Mara. I think having someone who can hold the ball up, and yes, it's against Soutar, but you want to remember Onuachu is also 6'7". So, like, he has the complete ability to be able to compete with him. Even if he's not as dominant, he'll compete with him and be an influence up there. Well, it felt like sometimes throughout the second half, he was clearing the ball and he was just going straight back to Leicester, and it was like playing against a brick wall. You're basically just clearing the ball, it's hitting it and coming straight back at you. So, yeah, I think it made sense of Adams starting and being a little bit more intelligent on when to press, when to go and all that sort of stuff. But I would have bought Onuachu on instead. And, of course, it's hindsight. We can all see how the game played out. And if Mara comes on, we score a counter-attack with Mara getting in behind. It's a great decision. But... yeah, me personally would have bought Onuachu on at that point instead of Mara.
Alcaraz scored the winner, but James Ward-Prowse had the chance to be the hero from the penalty spot. Jamie, what was your feelings before that spot kick? Because the pressure was huge.
So we were really ramping up. We played such good football. Like, the crowd really got behind the players. And I think the ball in from Theo Walcott and the hands were flailing from the Leicester defender. And it's just... It's weird, because I mentioned it before in the podcast, like the Lambert, whenever he got penalty, everyone's dead certain it's going to go in. Prowse has kind of started that little effect, but unfortunately Danny Ward read it well, and it wasn't actually that good penalty from Prowse, because he kind of normally puts it in the corners or just absolutely smacks it. But he kind of just put it in middle left. It's quite not easy. Also, no penalty saves are easy, but Ward is easily able to cover it and ultimately get the save. But
it's a good height of penalty. But also, I think it came up with a graphic on Sky, and he always puts his penalties to the goalie's right. That's what he's always doing. So it's because he hasn't mixed that up. But he doesn't smash it like Lambert, does he? He tries to caress the ball in with a bit of power, but he doesn't just smash it. Which I think is what, now that Southampton supporters have watched Ricky Lambert take penalties, is now how we want everyone to take penalties, is just to absolutely whack it and it will go in, it will be fine.
I mean, he's scored 16 out of his 22 Premier League penalties, but he's missed two this season. Now, call me outrageous if you want to, Mikey, but would you consider changing the spot kick taker? You know, look at Ainsley Maitland-Niles, cool as a cucumber. And I know he's not the captain. I know a lot of fans aren't his biggest fan, despite the fact he's played really well, or quite well, in two of his last three matches. Would you consider a change, or would you stay with Ward-Prowse?
I mean, it depends how they decide it. Because at Hedge End, when I used to play football, we used to do a penalty competition at the start of the year on who would then take the penalties throughout the season. And then they would just keep it for the entire year. So maybe Ward-Prowse won a penalty competition. I don't know. But I don't. He's missed two in a row. Like, they've been on target. He's not missed the target completely. But it might be an option for them is to change the penalty takers if that's a discussion that if Ward-Prowse doesn't feel confident enough stepping up to these penalties anymore, then maybe that is a discussion to have. I think we were the only team not to have a penalty in a game that we've had. We'd not given away one and we'd not had one ourselves until that moment against Leicester in the Premier League this year, which is quite a fun stat. Ward-Prowse, maybe it is time to relinquish his penalty taking. Maybe the next time that he gets a penalty, he smashes it into the top corner. It's just like, you don't know, maybe we might see a different person up. Who knows?
Yeah, it was a super fun stat, but also sadly it was a super incorrect stat. We conceded one against Fulham and we missed one or had one saved against Brighton as well. But I like that we're chucking it in there. Jamie, from your point of view, it doesn't seem like Ward-Prowse is a man that would have an ego. If there's a problem, if he doesn't feel like he can take them, you know, you could pass it along. Like I said, he scores 16 out of 22, so it's not a bad penalty taker. Yeah. What would you do in this decision? Because if we get a penalty, 0-0, 1-0 down, 1-0 up in close games, this defines our season.
Yeah. Well, it's a tough one because I don't know too much about the new players because I don't think Paul, I can imagine him having a decent penalty and absolutely whacking it in. But you're right with Prowse. Prowse is probably one of the only Premier League captains that doesn't have this massive ego around him because he just is a very humble guy. And so I sort of find his interview afterwards, he said he'd prefer the free kick. So maybe he's hinting, hey, take the free kicks, but let someone else take them. But I don't know, so, like I said, Maitland-Niles is a very good penalty taker. So if he's playing next time, it'd be interesting to see when, like, you know, the players grab the ball and then the captain then takes it off and gets someone else. Maybe Prowse will do that for Maitland-Niles, but I'd like to see it happen, but only just because of the importance of scoring goals and points in our season currently. If it was any other, like a normal mid-table boringness, yeah, Prowse keep going. But where it is actual importance now, it has to be talked about in the dressing room.
I mean, yeah, it was. He took them when Danny Ings missed. I think he missed one against Bournemouth, and it, from that point of view, he's just kept it from them. I think when Che Adams signed, he scored quite a few, and then he missed one in pre-season, and then the baton got passed over. So it really depends what they feel like in the changing room. But the goal, thankfully, was from Charlie Alcaraz. I was worried that the momentum might switch, as it often does when a big chance is missed, especially from a Saints point of view as well. And it felt like, Mikey, I don't know about you, but it felt like it would come through Alcaraz because he was causing trouble with those deep runs running in behind. And it felt like Leicester were getting caught a bit cold through the first half as well.
Yeah, he adds something different. I like the way that we lined up with two out-and-out wingers creating width in our attack, which is something that we sometimes struggle with if teams pin our fullbacks back and we've got Armstrong and Ellie and Uzi playing out wide, they like to drift inside into those half spaces. So it's something that we sometimes do lack. So playing with Walcott and Sulemana, you've got much more width. So it spreads the defence out a little bit more, opening those gaps that Alcaraz can make those runs in from deep and good penetrative third man runs. And that's exactly what he did. And he was causing trouble throughout the half and got the goal that he deserved. It was very tight on the offside goal on Che Adams. But yeah, it completely deserved his goal. He had a really, really good game, especially against Grimsby. I don't think he had he wasn't one of the performers. I was surprised he retained his place from Grimsby into this game. But obviously, Salles came in with a plan. He offers something a little bit different as someone who likes to get in behind, likes to break lines and makes those runs. And something you need for a team to try and progress up the pitch, something we've been missing. So, yeah, fantastic that he managed to get on that ball in behind. Again, lovely ball from Che Adams. And I think, importantly, Lavia, who got comments after the Grimsby game, didn't he? Like, saying that he wasn't performing at the level that he wanted, which was taken slightly differently from Jones's comments on him to Sellers's comments on him, which is quite interesting. He got back, won the challenge, got the ball back, and Maitland-Niles was the one who pinged the ball into Che Adams. So, yeah, just a really good goal of getting the ball back and quickly breaking, using that space that's in behind Leicester.
Yeah, you can see from those two very different games that Alcaraz is a dynamic midfielder. He couldn't have played like that against Grimsby because of their low block. He wouldn't have had the space to be able to do so. And in the second half, he came off, so did quite a few other players, and it felt like there was a bit of nervousness around the game, Jamie. Did we just about feel like we got over the line in the end? Because it felt like every chance that they were getting, they're getting closer and closer. And when they hit the bar, thankfully, that's as close as they got.
I genuinely had a heart attack when that header, because when Bazunu did the punch and missed it, my heart sunk. And I was so relieved when that final whistle went, because I thought they were going to blow the whistle when Bazunu absolutely belted up the pitch, but they kept playing on more, and the crowd was so confused as to what was going on. But thankfully, that final whistle went, and the importance of those 3 points after Bournemouth bottled their win against Arsenal take us off the bottom of the Premier League since Boxing Day, I believe. It's just so nice to see the players loving the moment. And Lavia tapping the badge, shaking it, showing his love for the fans in front of the northern end. It's just, you love to see it.
So I enjoyed that moment. Probably just an inch more than the Bournemouth loss as well. The cheers in the concourse were very much audible. Leeds lost, West Ham lost. And I'd probably say a perfect result between Forest and Everton, a draw, so neither of them got away. From a Saints weekend point of view, Mikey, was that almost as good as it could get?
Very good weekend. I mean, if Wolves would have slipped up against Spurs, that would have been even better. But on reflection of the weekend of football and the position that we could have been at the end of this weekend, it's definitely brighter. And I mean, when you talk about how close the bottom of the league is still, you're talking about 6 points and you could be in 12th. That's how close it is now in the bottom half of the league. And something that I've been saying since like Christmas, like it's so tight down there. It any of those teams could get sucked in. Like even the likes of Villa, like who's on 34 points, and Chelsea, who I don't think will be down there. I don't think either of them will be down there, to be honest. But like that's still touchable distance to the bottom three. So yeah, you talk about a lot of sides who are very, very in where they are in their form and how they're doing. Like West Ham losing to Brighton 4-0. Leeds not being able to bounce there from one wing to the next. And it's important now that we've got 2 wins in 3. Let's try and get a result at United. We know United's going to be a hard place to be, even with the 7-0 demolition that Liverpool gave them Sunday night. I think you've got to hope for a point. If you can get a point at United, that's fantastic. We did it a couple of years ago. We can hopefully do it again. And yeah, so it's Joe Tessam always goes about it on Radio Solent. Win your home games, draw your away games, you'll be fine. So that's what we've got to do. Let's try and pick our points away, and let's try and, after this win, bounce St Mary's back and try and make it a fortress like it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago under Koeman. I don't know how many years ago it was under
I mean, yeah, let's talk about that Manchester United game right now. Probably not the one you want coming off the back of a win. You want to get back-to-back ones, and there's not many harder places to do it than Old Trafford itself. Jamie, what are your thoughts going into this one? In the reverse fixture, it was a 1-0 loss. I think Bruno Fernandes crashed in the only goal of the game. Last season, we drew 1-1 there. Sancho was on, I think, quite a hot streak at the time. And then Che Adams got the equaliser. So what's your thoughts going into this one?
Well, I'm just glad we don't have them the game after 7-0, because thankfully they got a Europa League clash of Real Betis. So hopefully they'll take that anger out on them with that 7-0 battering. But it's unfortunate timing to go and play United, especially away at Old Trafford, which like I said about Fortress St Mary's. Old Trafford is a fortress this season. I think they've lost like one game there maybe this whole year, and it's been they've been unbelievable on Ten Hag. Well, apart from today, obviously, but it'll be a tough, tough fixture. But I kind of have some belief in us now. Obviously, it's 2 wins out of 3 in the Premier League under Sellers now. And maybe get a draw out of United if we're lucky. But I think if we've got any chance to do it, now is the time with our kind of in good form. So,
I mean, yeah, apart from their loss against Brighton right at the start of the season, there's no immediate poor result that springs to mind. Of course, they beat Manchester City there. I think they beat Arsenal there as well. Mikey, going into it, how much do you think the 7-0 will be on their mind? Do you think they'll look at it and go, we're going to need to bounce back from this? Or do you think it will drop the mood after what's been a sensational run of form? I think one loss in 25.
Yeah, I think it could go either way, really. You could see him swing and go, all right, that's just, it's a result that at the end of the day, a 7-0 loss is no different to a 1-0 loss. Yeah, you can see the six more goals, but actually, it really doesn't matter to the table. You just haven't picked up any points. Maybe your goal difference looks a little bit worse for wear, but apart from that, you're fine. But yeah, it's trying to prove that that's just a blip. That's not, that's one in 25, did you say? One defeat in 25 games, which is a fantastic run if that's the truth fact.
I don't know if it's
Carrie Neville, to be honest. But yeah, no, so it's going to be a tough place to go despite the 7-0 loss anyway. What I'm hoping is that there was quite a few tired legs out against Liverpool. They looked like that they just burned out and Liverpool just rolled them over. So what I'm hoping is they go quite full strength for Real Betis, because in my thought, United, as much as people are saying, oh, they may have a chance to sneak the Premier League, they're probably not going to win it this year. So their best bet is putting their troops into Europe instead of going into the Premier League. So fingers crossed they go full strength in the Europa League, batter Betis midweek, and then all of their anger, like Jamie said, has been flushed out of their bodies, and we can just roll them over on Sunday. That would be lovely.
Well, my anger's just hit its peak because Mikey just stole my next question in the fact that they're now out of a title race. They've already won the EFL Cup. The FA Cup tie isn't for another week or so. And their short little title challenge, no longer Arsenal, Manchester City, they're the main two. Do you think they will go full strength in the Europa League? Or do you think they'll sort of do a half and half? Because Betis, you know, they've struggled against some Spanish teams in the past a couple of seasons ago, but knocked out Barcelona, the best team in that league, by quite a distance, maybe compared to Real Madrid, maybe not. But how do you think they're going to line up in that game?
I think they've got to go strong. I don't think you can sort of take Europe lightly. These games are difficult games. You're playing against opposition that you don't usually play against. And Betis is, as much as it's, yeah, you know, they're not as good as Barcelona. We've seen it before of teams knocking big teams out and then losing to smaller teams. I don't know if Southampton rings a bell. But like, it could happen. Like, this is a big game for Real Betis. They're in a, what is it, quarterfinal of the Europa League now?
Yeah,
or is it last 16? Last 16. So they're one game away from a quarter, well, two games away from a quarterfinal match in Europe. And it's a big occasion for them. They get to play at Old Trafford. They get to play against Man United. They're going to go full strength and absolutely go out for it. So United have to be prepared. They have to be ready for the game. And hopefully that means that they go more full strength. And I don't know if they'll play completely their full 11, because you do expect United to beat Betis. But yeah, it's a game that they're at home. They have to take full advantage of them being at home and try and take a good lead into the second leg, that they can sort of rest players for that instead of our game, fingers crossed, hopefully.
I mean, if I'm not wrong, I think they finished below Real Sociedad in their Europa League group and even lost to them at Old Trafford. So they do have history against teams like that. Jamie, who do you want to see Saints play? As in the players that we are going to pick. How many changes? Do you want Che to play? Do you want Iheanacho to play?
Mm-hmm. What do you want? Well, I actually thought like the formation we played and the line was actually really good against Leicester. I just wouldn't mind seeing that again against United. But I just have a love for Paul Iheanacho. I don't isn't necessarily done too much for us yet. It's just the housery he could display against United. I want it to happen. You can't really hear see us, but they're laughing. They're laughing at me by saying that. But he just has that aura around him, sorry, and I want it to happen. It's like a Charlie Austin debut-esque feeling around this game, you know. Chuck him up there, let's see him go down in Southampton history.
All I'm saying is Onoachu against Martinez, it's just a done deal. It's going to be fantastic.
I should have said that's such a good point, actually. Obviously, height doesn't mean much in football, as he's kind of shown doing very well in the Premier League so far, apart from the 7 today, but all that.
Yeah, Mike, is this game a free hit, and how do you want us to approach it? How can we win apart from maybe Onoachu v Martinez?
I mean, we're probably looking to play on the counter, aren't we? We're going to try and absorb as much pressure from Man United and try and be a threat on the counter. And I mean, we've got players to do that. You look at Sulemana, you look at the pace that Walcott has, the runs that Alcaraz was making against Leicester. As long as his knee's okay and it's all right, we've got two players that I think if we play either, it's You got Onuachu, who's a bit more of a target and probably not as great with the ball at his feet, and probably his vision's not as fantastic. But you got a player who likes to play with his back to goal and then spin off and get into the box. You got Che Adams, who probably brings players in more and then looks to play that pass in behind. So you've got two options there of what you feel like you have in that game. We got two hard-working midfielders behind them, and then I'd stick with a very similar lineup, in all fairness. Again, it's just a personal preference of having a left-footed fullback on the left and a right-footed fullback on the right, and having Parade in there who can swing those first-time balls in is something that I would like personally. But we'll see where it gets us. Like, Walker Peters did a fantastic job against Leicester, so I can't really say he has to play at right back, and Maitland-Niles did a good job as well, so I can't say he can get out of the team, but that's just a personal preference of mine. If Salisu is fit, would you two put him in over Benarek? Because I'm guessing Belakotchap is a starter for all three of us. Would you put Salisu over Benarek, or would you keep Benarek in there? Because he's quite good in those defensive games, and I've probably done him over again after saying that before Leeds. But yeah, would you do?
I look at it and it feels like Bednarek has one great game and one poor game. He did really well against Chelsea, not so great against Leeds, and then he didn't play, obviously, because he was cup tied against Grimsby. So he missed out on his good game against the League Two team, and then played really well against Leicester. So I don't really want to see him against Manchester United. No, I'm joking. I think he's done all right. I think he's done okay. And he hasn't done anything to warrant not being in the team. I don't know about you, Jamie.
Well, all I remember of Benrecht playing in Old Trafford is that outrageous own goal our most recent 9-0 loss. But I think Sally was warming up a lot in that Leicester game, so it looked like he was ready to play. But I just think just go for Benrecht just this one game, just because he has that decent form at the moment. But I don't say decent, but you know, mediocre, you could argue.
It depends how training goes during the week.
Yeah.
If he's running hot on training, then go for it. If he's not, time for Salisu to come in.
My only thing would be, we know that Salisu's got that yard of pace that Bednarek doesn't quite have. Like, sometimes Bednarek lacks that yard of pace, and we're going up against Man United, who have Rashford running in behind, who has Anthony running in behind. They've got a lot of speed that like running at players. So that would be my only thing. Would maybe it would work more with Bednarek, but we also know that Salisu sometimes struggles with players in the air, and you've got Val Veghorst, who can cause a lot of problems, and of course he hasn't scored yet, so I'm not going to say the rest of that sentence.
No,
but he hasn't scored yet, so but yeah, so I think it's either or, and I think Belakotchap, just he has that starting 11 spot nailed down, really, under Hasenhüttl and under Sells, less under Jones because of part injury, part not really playing. But I think Sells likes him, and I think he adds an element. He has that pace to be able to recover mistakes, while I think Benarek just doesn't quite have that, so he has to be on it all the time.
Right, there's going to be battles all over the pitch, but there's only going to be one scoreline. Marky, what do you think it's going to be?
I'm going to go for a 1-1 out of hope. That's what I'm going to go for. It's going to be a 1-1 draw.
It feels like when I predict draws, we win. So I'm going to go for 1-0. Jamie, what are you thinking?
After my successful prediction last week, I'm going to go for a cheeky 1-0 victory again.
Everything's a cheeky something.
I know, mate. Because it is.
I love it.
But I mean, for another little 1-0 win, I think, you know, the 89th minute, Paul Ochoa header. He leaps over Martinez and gets the victory.
Yeah. Right, Mikey missed the podcast last week, but one thing he requested was the return of Guess Who. So I've done exactly that for this podcast. If you're not been with us before, A, welcome. But B, the thing around this quiz is that the answer is a former Saints player, and the three players are players that they've played with outside of their time at Southampton. It could be before, could be after. There's no sort of, you know, realms. There's no sort of thing around it. It could be any time before, after, all of that. And the three players this week are Adama Traore, Andre Schürrle, and David Luiz. That's Adama Traore, Andre Schürrle, and David Luiz.
Adam Traore, Andre Schürrle,
and David Luiz.
David Luiz, wow. This is a good list of players. Adam Traore, where has he played?
Again, we're not doing nations, are we? We're just doing...
It could be. I'm not going to say no.
I might know it. Is it Callum Chambers?
It is Callum Chambers. He's nailed it straight away.
That's outrageous. I had Adam Traore, Middlesbrough, David Luiz, Arsenal, and Fulham, Schürrle.
I wish
that's so annoying
to see Mikey's celebration for knowing that. He has cracked that immediately.
Oh, I was so close to that as well, because I was thinking Traore, Middlesbrough is the only link there possible. But Luiz threw up, I completely forgot about the Arsenal bit. But, fair play, Mikey. That was very quick. That was good.
Segment back. And he's got points.
I mean,
not doing a scoring system, but he's got it straight away. Anyway.
I'm revising for that.
Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week on the podcast. We sadly had to go through that Grimsby defeat, but we bounced back ourselves with quite a happy look back at the game against Leicester before previewing the game against Manchester United. Hopefully, we can look back positively once again next week, but it's going to be a much tougher ask. I've been Harry Tisdale. I've been joined by Jamie Allen.
Thank you very much for listening.
Mikey Maysman.
Goodbye.
And we'll see you next week for more Saints fun.
Not sure I like that one, though.
Is that how you want to end it? Oh, I'll kick Craig.
I don't know. Yeah. Why not? Why not?
Use a little bit at the end as well, mate. This is funny.
Yeah, that's fine, mate.
more Saints fun.